Welcome to the Hunger for Change podcast.
I'm very happy to present Judy Cho. She's a holistic nutritionist, author of Carnivore Cure, Meat-Based Nutrition, and the Ultimate Elimination Diet for Optimal Health. We discussed the carnivore diet, healing the gut, and how to incorporate this in your lifestyle. I had a great time talking to her, and I hope you enjoy listening to it. So I'm so excited to get to know you better. And I would like to start on what your passion, your nutrition passion, your health passion, where does it come from? How did it start?
Yeah, so I was a management consultant for 12 years. I was plant-based. I got really sick. I landed in the mental hospital on New Year's Eve of my first son's, his first New Year's Eve. And they diagnosed me with major depression and an eating disorder. And they said that that would be sort of the areas I should focus on for healing. I went to an eating disorder facility and they taught me so many good supports of like thinking about what is causing you to turn to food or causing you to binge and purge and lots of other things. But the one thing they didn't teach me was about nutrition itself. So they thought everything was on the table. You should be able to eat a cupcake and be fine. You should be able to eat pizza and not have an issue. And I wasn't fully getting better. And then I found the keto diet that helped a lot. I was still plant-based, but I was adding more fat. So it helped some, but it wasn't enough. And I heard about the carnivore diet. I heard it was, I thought it was so crazy. And I decided to try it out of desperation because I wasn't getting better and I didn't want to end up in the hospital again. And so I tried it and it changed my life. It's been over 5 years now. And in that period when things started just healing for me and I wasn't on any more medications because they put me on antidepressants, antipsychotics, and I was seeing a dietitian and all these things. And I no longer needed any of it. And I just wanted to understand why. So while I was on leave for my job, I decided to go into nutritional therapy school. I learned about it. And I ultimately, I got a second chance at life where I can be a mother to my children and be present for them and not be sick, not be depressed in bed. And I really feel that I wanted, like my purpose is to share this with the world. So whether it's through infographics, through podcasts, through videos, through working with people one-on-one in our private practice, it's really to help people so that no one has to really go through what I did. And that's really where the passion comes from. It's, I know the secret now of what can make you better, what can make you get off antidepressants. And I wanted to share it with the world.
Okay. And so when you started with the keto diet, how, what about the results? How fast did you see, actually, did you notice things changing?
Yeah. So with the keto diet, my plant-based diet was lots of green salads with, sometimes I'd have the egg whites, but I wouldn't eat the egg yolks. So not a lot of nutrition. I would eat all these big bowl salads, but I wouldn't eat a lot of fat. So that was one of the issues of my plant-based diet.
At the beginning, you didn't eat.
Before the keto diet.
Right.
So anything plant-based I would eat. And then occasionally I'd have fish, but generally speaking, I was vegetarian. And then once I did the keto diet, I had the same diet, but I added so much fat. So I would add olive oil and avocado oil. I didn't really use butter, but I would be okay for longer periods before binging and purging, but then it would eventually fall. So I would be carrying around sugar-free candies all the time because, hey, they don't count as a carb. I was eating fat bombs and it wasn't enough nourishment because I was still plant-based on a keto diet that eventually I would fall. It would just take longer for me to fall. And I definitely felt a little bit better because I wasn't having the blood sugar dysregulation from all the carbohydrates I used to eat, like breads and real sugar and ice creams, but it wasn't enough for me to heal. And it wasn't until I started eating meat, which had more bioavailable or more readily available nutrients and an array of meats that started helping me heal my gut as well as my mental health.
So you promoted a carnivore elimination diet. Can you explain to me what is that?
Yeah. So I work with some of the sickest people in our community. It's when carnivore doesn't always fully work perfectly that, you know, all the incredible stories we hear online, but some people will say, well, I've been doing it for a year and my hormones are still messed up, or my stools are still loose, or something is not working. And so then a lot of people will come work with us, and we start with the Carnivore Cures Elimination Protocol. It's the book I wrote. And within the book, I explain why this diet is ideal and optimal for proper health and nutrition. And in the protocol, basically, we start with ruminant meats because most people can typically tolerate ruminant meats. That's like beef, lamb, elk. Those are the main ones that most people eat. And then over time, as people's symptoms start improving, so maybe they're not having as many gut imbalances or gut issues. Maybe they're not having as many blood sugar dysregulations or insulin resistance, whatever the case may be, that if there's a balance of a baseline of health, then if they feel, okay, I feel stronger, I feel healthier enough, then we start adding other layers. And maybe
how long does it take more or less that the first step?
It depends. Some people, it's less than a month. Some people, it's over a month. So it really depends. It depends on, the honest truth is, when it depends on your history. So if you are younger, there's a higher chance you can move faster. If you've been dealing with chronic illness, chronic fatigue, chronic symptoms of autoimmunity, thyroid imbalances, hormone issues, and you're 70 or 60, it may take a longer. So it really depends on the person. And it depends also on how fast you can heal your gut. So most people, their gut is imbalanced. We eat foods that affect our gut. So nuts, grains, they all have some level of anti-nutrients or plant toxins. We think about gluten. Gluten is an anti-nutrient. We think about lectins. Lectins are an anti-nutrient. So all of those plant toxins, well, every plant has multiple toxins. And if you're eating a lot of those types of foods, your gut is probably not ideal. If you're not sleeping well, that can also cause gut dysbiosis. If you have a lot of stress, same thing. If you've ever struggled with heartburn, acid reflux, GERD, H. pylori, SIBO, all of those gut things that you, your gut needs work. And basically, when we start eating less of these plant toxins that cause inflammation within the body or dysbiosis or gut permeability, then we can start healing. And our brain, our gut is like our second brain. It carries most of our immune health, our immune system. It carries most of our neurotransmitters. So I'm not surprised that I wasn't having good mental health, and all of a sudden I'm struggling with an eating disorder and severe depression. My gut was in disarray. I wasn't eating sufficient fat, which would support my sex hormones. And then the neurotransmitters, I mean, where am I producing my serotonin and tryptophan and all of these things that ultimately you're getting them from your foods? And when you don't eat sufficient animal products of for the amino acids, you're not going to be getting a lot of that.
And what about yourself? Did you start with this diet, like a very strict keto diet, and then you went back to like more of a balanced diet, or are you still very strict?
Yeah, so I've been doing it for a little bit over 5 years, and my first 3 years, I would say my first 6 months, I tried beef only, and I wasn't good enough at it. And I don't know if it's because I wanted other things, but I did beef only. I did feel a lot better, but then I slowly added chicken and pork. And as a nutritionist and looking at a lot of the nutrient densities and nutrient profiles in meats, there are nutrients in other foods other than beef. So as an example, pork is very rich in thiamine, which is B1. It's really important for the autonomic nervous system. It's really good for metabolism. So there's a whole reason to consume pork for that. But if you can't consume pork for religion or for tolerance, then you can consume things like salmon, which salmon has some of that B1, but it's not a lot in beef. And it doesn't matter if you even eat liver, it's not in the beef liver that much either. And so I started adding literally everything that's the, in the animal-based kingdom. And so whether it's a little bit of dairy, whether it's eggs, fish, chicken, pork, beef, lamb, all of those foods. And I've been eating that. I was very strict for the first 3 years. So only meats, if there was some anti-nutrients of seasonings or black pepper, I wouldn't eat it. And it got to a point where it was impacting my life, in the sense of if I wanted to go to a restaurant, I would have to ask, like, what do you put in your seasoning? What do you do this? And it just, I just got to a point of, is this an eating disorder where I'm being almost orthorexic, where I need a perfect food, perfect everything, or is this really what I need for healing? And wanting to challenge my eating disorder, I decided, you know, let me try to eat some, like, for example, there's a local place in town called Rudy's, and all their rubs on their meats, they use a little bit of sugar. I used to never eat there because of that reason. So there was one time I went and I ate it, and I just wanted to see how I felt, and it was okay. So over the years, I've just been more open to that. And then in the last year, maybe year and a half, if my children and my husband is eating some plants, like maybe they're having steamed broccoli, I'll have maybe one piece and just see how it is. And I've done that with everything. So I've done that with not really fruits, but I just don't really like it, but maybe some veggies, maybe even a little bit of ice cream, just to see, am I healed or am I using carnivore as a band-aid? And I can say with genuine honesty that I'm healed. And if I choose to eat a little bit of ice cream, I can, but I will feel it in a little bit of more, like I don't feel as sharp. So I just don't eat it mostly because I feel best in a ketogenic state.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, so you become a bit more flexible.
Yeah, 100%.
The last 2 years or so, I've been following, I mean, I'm celiac since birth.
Okay, and,
So I've never had, you know, pasta, pizza, basically, not even the gluten-free versions, right?
Okay, good.
But
good.
Like 10, but so it's like 10, 12 years ago, I started with the paleo diet. I was just curious at the beginning, you know, and so I started to just avoiding sugar, and then to avoid rice, potato, corn, and I felt so much better, you know. And then I became more and more strict, more and more paleo. And the last couple of years, I've become more carnivore. But so my diet now is like it's carnivore, and I eat fruit and raw dairy. That's what I do, fruit and berries. What would you say about that, the diet that I'm having now?
Yeah, so it really depends on the person. I know people on social media always have these kind of dogmatic personalities, right? Like this person in the carnivore space does this, that person does that. And I think for most of my clients, they have metabolic syndrome, insulin resistance. And so fruit is probably not the first thing that they want to include, but it depends. Like you look pretty lean. If you're metabolically healthy and you're an athlete or you're athletic or you work out a lot, then maybe you can handle it. I honestly think I could handle a little bit of fruit too now, but before I was pre-diabetic. And so maybe now in 5 years, if I wanted to bring it in, but I also don't feel as good on eating fruits, and I've never done honey. So I've never done the honey stuff, but I know that when I, let's say I have a spoonful or like a half a cup of ice cream with my carnivore diet, I know the next day I don't feel as sharp as when I'm eating only meat. So if I know that there's an important deadline of work I need, or I need to be really sharp, I won't eat those foods. So I include them for flexibility, for variability, to just test my eating disorder. But generally speaking, we don't need those foods. And I think there's a spectrum for every single person. If you struggled with an eating disorder, maybe fruit is not good. So maybe an apple will turn into apple pie, for example. So that's where it really depends on the person. If you're metabolically healthy, maybe a fruit once a day or twice a day is not bad. I don't think this whole belief of eating like 10 fruits in a day is ideal for you. I don't think that's ideal for anyone. And I've had many people on my podcast that talks about certain fruits, the level of fructose, and how fructose causes basically the metabolic switch to happen, where essentially it'll turn on your fat storing gene of, hey, I'm storing fat for the winter. But if you're eating that all day long or all year long, you're gonna start gaining weight.
Yeah, and I agree.
And then there's a lot of studies on that. So it's just, it depends. If for every single person, I really think it varies. And you know, the truth is most Americans are obese and most Americans are overweight and unhealthy. So most Americans probably couldn't handle adding lots of fruit and maybe honey with their meats. But if the people that are healthy, that over the years have gotten better and they're metabolically flexible, then yes, maybe they can tolerate a fruit or two. But I think this notion that everyone should start there is wrong, because especially since I work with the sickest people, and I know that it does no benefits for them.
I know. I know what you mean. I agree. And the numbers in Europe, they're not much better than the US. You know, I heard recently that 92% of the American people are metabolically have yeah. issues, right? And the numbers in Europe, I think they're 85-86%. So it's really bad. So, and I agree with you. It's, I mean, to have 10 fruits a day, that's a lot. but if you do work out, which I actually do, I work out every day. So I feel that the energy that I get from the fruit is being burnt in some way or another before. And also I do try to, I've been doing intermittent fasting the last 6-7 years. So I don't have breakfast, basically. I have a butter tea in the morning.
Okay.
Which I like a lot. And so interesting.
Let me say one thing. So I think the best way to know where you fall in the diet and how it's working for you is I use 5 measures of health. And I think that's the best way. So obviously your blood work is super important, but there's context to blood work. So we see mostly carnivore clients and we see other people for other severe illnesses too. But generally speaking, most of our clients are ketogenic or carnivore, and there's blood work markers that differ, right? So our LDL going up in context is different for somebody that's carnivore versus somebody that's eating the standard American diet. You'll also see that our triglycerides are under 100 normally. I know it's not the same numbers in Europe, I think, but there's these things. So that's one. So having blood work being done often is good, but make sure to have it be read by somebody that's carnivore or ketogenic literate so that they know how to look at the numbers. But the other 5 things I generally ask people to look at is your mood, your stools, your energy, your sleep. And then I forget the other one, but it's just knowing that if you're eating this way, as long as your gut feels okay, so you're having normal stools, your energy is okay, your sleep is good, your mood is good. Mm-hmm. And then I think the other one may have been hormones, but as long as those are good, like you're getting your period consistently or your testosterone is in the normal range, then whatever way you're eating is probably okay. Yeah. And that's where I think carnivore is a spectrum. I know people want to go, so can I eat fruit? Is it in or out? And it's really, it depends. Like you could probably have half a cup of blueberries and you'll be okay. But if the blueberries end up becoming blueberry pie or like binging off of other foods, then it's probably not okay. It's so individualized and you cannot communicate that well through the internet. So that's just, I would think about the 5 things. So it's stool, mood, hormones, and I would say, and energy.
Yeah. Anyway, so the insulin levels, the blood sugar levels, you can also measure. So I mean, we can all try it if we're interested in that and we want to know about those levels and those biomarkers, we can always measure them, right?
Yes. The one thing about blood sugar is it changes a little bit with the carnivore diet. So some people will see their blood sugar go up by a little bit, but all their markers otherwise is good. So their insulin looks good. Also the A1C measures mostly glucose and not fructose. So if you're eating a lot of fruit, it will measure some of it because this gets very sciencey, but in the body, some of the fructose can convert to glucose and then you'll see it measured in your blood glucose. But there are when it's just in fructose form, your glucose or your A1C or your blood glucose will not measure it because it's measuring a different sugar.
Okay. Something actually that I learned recently is that the major part of the fruit that you're having, the fructose, basically the fructose, is not being converted into energy for the body, but is being eaten or consumed by the bacteria in your gut. What do you say about that?
I don't think that's wholly true. I mean, I think some of it may be true. I don't know specifically with the gut, because generally speaking, I don't recommend people eating fructose and glucose only because when I have clients suffering from candida, there's always a gut imbalance or a gut dysbiosis. Candida feeds off of sugar. So it doesn't matter if it's fructose or glucose, it could honestly be mold. But if you are eating any amounts of sugar, I think doing a candida protocol, especially if you have like athlete's foot or you have itchy head or, you know, other symptoms of the candida rashes, then eating zero sugar is ideal, calming the gut. And then if you still have candida, it could be mold. But generally speaking, it's not ideal to have too much fructose because fructose, there's a pathway that basically tells your body to store fat. And so in that way, it will also down-regulate your energy within the cells. And there's a whole, I did an interview with Dr. Richard Johnson, and he talks about all the mechanisms of how fructose, when your body tastes fructose, it wires the brain to eat more, feel hungry more often, and then also to store more weight. That's why bears right before winter, they eat so much fruit to get fat so that it'll sustain them over the winter. Well, we're not a bear and we're not in winter all day long, and we have fruit all over, right? So we're feeding our children like fructose drinks and juices, and then also breads, and then you're also feeding them fruit. So that's where it's just too much sugar. But I don't believe that fructose is just feeding the gut. It can feed the gut, but I don't think it's feeding only the gut. So that I would have to look into it a little bit more, but just from my understanding of fructose, that's not true.
But there is a huge difference between fructose when it comes in the fruit with the fibers, with the nutrients, and the soft drink, right? You can't really compare those two sources of fructose.
No. And that's true too. So, I interviewed Dr. Robert Lustig, and he talked about how fruit has fiber. And so when you deduct the fiber amounts, the fruit is a lot more safer, but obviously with juice, it's different because juice doesn't have any of the fibers. It's just the actual sugar and the juice part. And you could drink a lot more. So one glass of orange juice is five oranges, whereas most people will not eat five oranges. So it really depends. If I'm going with my children, I, for example, will get organic apples, and I'll make sure that they eat the skin because the skin has most of the fiber, which will then slow down the sugar or the fructose load. But certain fruits have more fructose than others. So it really depends, but I agree. There is soda and fruit is not the same thing. Absolutely not. But somebody, again, it depends on the person. If somebody rationalizes that I can eat a lot of fruit because it's permitted on my diet, and then they eat a lot, they could still have high blood glucose just from eating fruit. So again, it depends on that context. And the other thing is dried fruit is pretty much like candy. Lots of the fiber may not be intact, and then you're able to eat a lot in one sitting, which is not as natural too.
Talking about fruit, that's why it's so important to get organic fruit, right? Because otherwise the pesticides are on the skin, right?
Yes. That's the number one reason I get organic. It's not because there's a nutrient difference. It's mostly because that glossy sheen you feel on apples, that is a pesticide, and it is, or it's some type of chemical that they've used that, it's in a lot of the fruits, they spray multiple different chemicals so that the bugs don't eat it. And there's enough, crops that they're harvesting. And so with animals, we're not spraying them with toxins. Whereas, and then when, even if you eat grain finished meats, they have to, the farms or the places have to make sure that there's no more antibiotics or hormones in these animals. So they are a lot cleaner, and you don't store toxins normally in muscle, right? You store it in maybe some of the fat, maybe in the liver and other organs, but with plants, the outside is always sprayed. And there's some plants where they, I think some of the wheat, they do this too specifically, but they want the wheat to dry faster. So they spray glyphosate on top of it. So it dries faster.
Horrible.
So you're getting that right before, you know, they send it to the market. And you just have to wonder how much of that are you eating? But if you just limit all plants in general, you're just getting a lesser dose.
You mentioned before the LDL and the blood works, right? And so I often get the questions about my carnivore diet or my paleo diet, that how can you have so much meat? How is it possible to eat all that butter that you're eating? And as you mentioned before, the LDL and the HDL, all cause cholesterol goes up, right? When you're a carnivore diet.
Yes.
Does that worry you?
No. So there was a study a while ago called the Framingham study. I think it was from the 20s or maybe it was the 50s. I'm forgetting exactly the date, but one example in that study was that they showed that LDL, the risk of LDL causing and the increase of it, what is the risk of cardiovascular events? And it showed that if the LDL is going up, there is a risk, but then if the HDL is going up, there's a less of a risk. So that's where it's in context. Typically, yes, eating saturated fats such as eggs and butter and beef will make your LDL go up, but it's not the LDL alone that's the issue. So in context, Yeah, there's a little bit of that ratio. And yes, so for most carnivores, the ratio is not an issue too. And the HDL going up with it, which it often does, then you're not having a concern. So I like to see the HDL around between high 50s to maybe 85. And the LDL, I mean, it could go up depending. And then I also like looking at the triglycerides. Triglycerides is the floating fat in your blood. And people that eat carbohydrates, their triglycerides are high. So generally speaking, the standard American way of looking at those numbers would be that anything above, anything below 150 is considered safe. Well, for the carnivore community, we consider anything below 100 to be safe. So there's these other markers to look at. And then you can look at insulin and A1C and C-peptide and other markers of inflammation, because the concern is that if there's a lot of cholesterol, that they're causing inflammation or can be around inflammation, and that can cause a cardiovascular event. But we are looking at the wrong thing. We should be looking at overall inflammation in the body in all areas. And so
blood
there are
pressure
many.
Also, like,
yes. And blood pressure. Oh, blood pressure is a huge one. And so looking at all the other markers in context of the LDL matters so much more than just looking at the LDL alone.
Right. I was listening to one of your podcasts actually earlier today. You were talking about the ratio. Was it you divide the total cholesterol?
I think it's the total. I have to look. There's two ratios. So one is, I think it's the total over HDL.
Over LDL?
Or maybe it's LDL. I have to look.
I think you said LDL. And then if it's below 4, then it's then you're good.
Yeah.
Like
so
that.
Yeah. No, that's right. And then there's one with triglycerides. And I can't remember the exact ratios. I'll send it to you after this call so that you can at least maybe put it in the show notes or something. But so the ratios are really important to look at, because that's how they also look at cardiovascular risk. And sometimes I pull cholesterol markers or blood work for my clients, and their LDL is like above 300. And so for any just standard doctor, that they might think that's concerning, but then you look at their CHD ratio risk and it's not high. It's not 4. So it's just, and I can't remember which of the certain markers, but yeah. So I just, there's always context to cholesterol. And so, the other thing is I did a lot of research on statins, which statins are, you know, the medication that they give you to help lower cholesterol. And it's the number one selling drug in the world. Number one. Well, when I did research for it, it showed that out of 100 people that actually have cholesterol, like high cholesterol, it only helped one person of the 100
to lower
not,
the LDL.
Right.
Yeah.
No, not just lower, but just risk, lowered the risk of having a cardiovascular event. Of 100 people that already have high, and then there's risk of taking these statins. So it causes lots of mental imbalances. Sometimes people have more anger or mood issues, and then it causes a lot of muscle illnesses. So people all of a sudden feel muscle pain and fatigue.
Yeah, I know.
And so there's these imbalances that people also don't talk about. And then the other thing is, of people that actually have heart attacks and cardiovascular events, only 50% of them have actual high cholesterol. So why do we think it's the cholesterol?
I completely agree. And I was listening to this podcast with Peter Attia. He was interviewing an expert on this, and he was saying that he had patients, they had LDL on 700-800, you know, something like that, but he couldn't care less. He said that they were in perfect shape, you know, blood pressure, HDL, all the other biomarkers, they were excellent. So he didn't, that was nothing, something that wasn't something that worried him, you know?
right. So, and I have a few clients like that too, where I can't really speak to the full science of this. You would have to have Dave Feldman on or something, but there's hyper responders within the low carb community where they just maybe process through the LDL faster. And so their LDLs go up a lot more. But if you look at their triglycerides and their HDL and then all other blood work, they're perfectly fine.
Yeah.
And the thing is, if you go to a standard doctor, they will say, oh my gosh, your LDL is so high, you need to get on a statin. But again, it's just, there's more context to it.
Of course. And also you could have this scan, this, what is it called?
The calcium.
Coronary calcium
scan.
The
artery. Yeah.
And actually I did that just a few weeks ago, because I never did that before, and I'm 52 years old, and I've been doing the carnivore diet for 3 years, and I've been doing the paleo diet for 12 years. So I thought, why not see? And the results were really, really good. I had basically zero. They told me I have zero plaque, which was good news.
Yeah, so the CAC score, for the people that don't know, it was created by Dr. Arthur Agassin, and it basically shows how much plaque is in your arterial, your wall, your arteries. And even if you show 15 or 20 or some markers, so zero is best, meaning that there's none that they've detected. But if you even have 15 or 20, and there's some people that do, it's just a snapshot in time that it was there. There's nothing you could really do much about that that's there. And the goal is then that you don't do anything in your lifestyle to make it worse. So I think Dr. Agassin recommends going in every couple years to just, or maybe it was like 3 years, and just test again. Is there any new buildup? And if there's not, because your diet and lifestyle have changed, then you're good. And I wouldn't worry too much about like the 12 or 15 or 20 that was in there.
Yeah. And it can actually improve. Get rid of part of it, right?
Yeah. I mean, I asked him that. He says sometimes, but if you have like, I think he said 70 or 100, it's really hard to remove all of it. But he says, don't worry too much about that. You just don't want any new amounts. But he has seen some of it go away. Now, there might be someone else we can talk to that says you could totally remove it. I just don't know that much about that area. No.
Yeah, sure. And okay, so what about iron? Because that's also something that I hear and I read about people on carnivore diet or paleo diet. They are usually having quite high levels of ferritin.
Sure.
And other iron levels. And I do have myself quite a high ferritin level. I think it's like 270 or something like that, almost 300. What do you think about that?
Yeah, so it is common to see ferritin go up for women because we bleed once a month. It's normally not an issue. And if it is an issue, it could be related to inflammation. I also like to just look at the overall iron panel. So if your iron's low or your ferritin's just high, it could also be for some people. If you think about ferritin, it's the storage amount of iron, whereas iron that's just called iron, it's normally the blood in the blood, I believe. And if your blood iron is low, that means that something is imbalanced. Sometimes it's a parasite. So for example, parasites live off of iron. So that would be one thing I would see, is if someone seems like they're anemic, then it could be related to parasites. If it's not that, and it's just that your ferritin's going up, I mean, the solve right now in the carnivore community is to donate your blood, maybe drink more raw dairy, as raw dairy helps to reduce that ferritin load as well.
I didn't know that. So raw dairy is good to release that excess iron.
Yeah. There's some enzymes or nutrients in raw dairy, and specifically milk, I believe, that helps to balance the ferritin to not go high, because some people believe, well, if you keep donating blood for ferritin reasons, that's just a band-aid. So what's the real reason? And so there are other people that recommend drinking raw milk, and raw milk has certain enzymes and nutrients that will counter the issue that's causing the ferritin to go high. So I would try that for a little bit.
Yeah. Could that be the lactase maybe?
No, it's none of the sugars. No. It's a specific enzyme or nutrient. And that's why I can't think of it. It's not a vitamin. It's not a mineral. It's a specific type of enzyme or something like that that causes it to drop. But yeah, if your ferritin is high, 200 honestly is not terribly high. I think 150 is a cap. So if you're at 200, I would just donate blood maybe once every 6 months, once every year, and it'll stimulate your body to produce new clean blood. So that's always a good thing.
Good. So what about the difference between men and women in, because we have different needs, right, for different nutrients. Does the carnivore diet benefit women more than men, or the other way around? What do you think?
No, I think it's a species appropriate, meaning that all humans should be eating a lot of meat. Meat has the most nutrients, most bioavailable, meaning it's mostly absorbed and able to be assimilated by the body. And so for all those reasons, I highly recommend it for men, whether it's the hormones of testosterone, or for women, for thyroid and for sex, the progesterone, estrogen, all of them are sex hormones. They're very much derived from cholesterol and acetyl-CoA and a certain B vitamin. And so if you eat a lot of meat and you make sure you have enough fat, you should be supported. The differences I see with men and women is that, one, men can fast for shorter than women and reap the same benefits of losing weight. I think men, if you fast for, I think I'm quoting Dr. Jason Fung, but I think it's 18 hours is the same as women fasting for 36 hours. So it's just not, yeah, it's not as fair, but there's just some mechanistics of around that. And then also with women, you know, our hormone systems, our thyroid systems are much more complicated. There is more thyroid imbalances in women than there are in men. And a lot of that is derived by the endocrine system, which really is supported by eating sufficient fat, having good salt and hydration, and the B vitamins. So I think for every male or female, I think there's a mistake where some males will eat insufficient amounts of fat, and the fat, the testosterone is provided by having sufficient fat. Now, I know we can produce fat or cholesterol within our body, but it's just beneficial. And I see a lot of men that are very active, eat really lean meats, but they'll just add fruit as the energy support. But I think they would do better for their testosterone, for their DHEA levels by consuming more fat. But they may just not need to eat as much fat as a woman.
Yeah, exactly. So what about organ meats? Do you recommend specific parts of the animal? Yeah. What are your favorites?
Yeah, so it depends. I'm a big fan of bone broth. I'm a big fan of bone marrow because there's so much nutrition in that marrow. They're not always the easiest to get, but those are big things. Bone broths have so much collagen and so many minerals and so much of that rich stuff that is not always in just muscle meats. I think organs, the heart is a good one. I mean, there's a lot of CoQ10 in that, and it's more, doesn't taste as off-putting because it doesn't taste as minerally, and it's more of a muscle meat. Tongue, same thing. But when it comes to like the liver and kidneys, I just really recommend people to make sure to eat it in the same size of a real animal. So an animal can be 800 pounds, and whereas the liver is maybe 12. So just make sure to eat it in the same in those doses. Proportions. Yeah, in the proportions. And also, I don't think you always need to eat the organic meats because, again, the muscle meats don't really have a lot of the toxins. But I do think when it comes to the organs, liver and kidneys, those are the things that help us detox, help us filtrate out stuff. How do we know when we process the animal, it wasn't going through a process of detoxing, or if the animal is sick, the liver? I mean, think about humans. When we get we eat too much fructose and we get non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, or if we're eating too many carbohydrates or we drink too much alcohol, we get fatty liver. So these animals also can have imbalances in their liver and their kidneys. So you just want to make sure that you're, if I were eating more liver and kidneys, I would make sure and get it from clean animals that were healthy and knowing that they were healthy. So that's just something to consider.
Organic and meat and grass-fed, right?
Yeah. So the, and if you know your farmer, that would even be more ideal. But if, and I think in Europe, a lot of the meats are grass fed, but just making sure you trust, and then also not eating like a pound of liver in one sitting. It's just unnatural. Right. Like maybe you just have an ounce, or I think it's, I can't remember the conversion. Maybe it's 100 grams. Is that, does that sound right?
Like 100 grams. Yeah.
Okay. Or no, maybe it's 30 grams, like 30 grams.
100 grams is quite a lot. And I think that's something that you actually feel that you're having too much of something that is so specific, like the liver, you know, the taste is quite strong. And I think it's enough. We do in Europe and in Sweden, where I'm from originally, we do a lot of liver pate.
Yeah.
And the liver pate is something that you put on your, on a sandwich, not that much. I mean, it's enough to just spread a little bit, and that's enough.
Yeah. So and I think that's in good proportion. So I think it's 30 grams. So I think 1 ounce is 30 grams. So, but I really think also, there are risks of too much nutrition in liver, and there's, and vitamin A specifically, and also copper. So it's just find the balance that makes sense for you. But I think eating the real food form is the best. So I know there's a lot of people that take supplements or capsules or some other thing, and you're bypassing our whole body has a very strong communication tool. And when you eat something and you really, really dislike it, maybe you like liver the first ounce and it tastes good, but then you eat another bite the next day and it makes you want to, you don't feel good and makes your stomach turn, then it's a sign that you probably don't need the nutrients your body.
It's important to listen to your body, right? So what about losing weight? Is the carnivore diet something that you would recommend?
Yes.
If so that's your goal, I mean, your objective is to lose weight.
Yeah. So I think when you are obese or you have metabolic syndrome, absolutely. If you have been under eating your whole life, so let's say you're really thin and you've been under eating your whole life and maybe you're amenorrheic, meaning you don't have your period or your period is not consistent. If you all of a sudden try to eat the right amount of meat for you on a carnivore diet, there's a chance you're going to gain weight. I was very thin when I was plant-based and I gained some weight on carnivore and like, this is me gained weight. But for some people, that's not okay. So for some women that are really, really tiny, that's not okay. But the question is, well, you were malnourished before. So that's where I just like to be super candid. But for most men, I feel that most men, as they work out, as they start eating healthier, and then they start incorporating more things because they have more energy and they're sleeping better, you see people start to get six packs and they never had that before. So yes, absolutely, people can lose weight and have a nice physique, but people also work at that too. So they'll go to the gym more and they'll be more active. But when you take care of your nutrition, which is like the baseline, then it bleeds into everything else in your life. So you have more energy, you have a better mood. So now you want to socialize more. And so you have more connection and you're able to sleep better because your sex hormones are more balanced and your blood sugar is more balanced. So yes, but if you are severely anorexic, I still recommend carnivore because it will finally give you the nutrition you need. But people like the people that may be anorexic, for example, they may gain weight and that's okay because they're already at a weight that they shouldn't be.
Yeah, exactly. So actually, so what you're saying is that the carnivore diet can help you both ways, right? It can normalize your weight, right?
Yes, yes.
Yeah. And what about vegetables? Are they not necessary at all? Because you don't eat vegetable, basically. You told me you can have a piece of broccoli but I mean, what you're saying is that they're not really necessary for us.
Just from my research alone, I don't think you need vegetables. And I know, I literally in my book, I talked about all the things that people think about. So whether it's fiber, whether it's antioxidants, whether it's eating the rainbow. So, I mean, we could knock out some of those as an example with antioxidants. So the reason we want antioxidants, right? So that rich blue color in blueberries is if we have inflammation in the body or oxidation or, you know, these cells that are not doing, they're kind of going crazy because they're not balanced. These antioxidants are supposed to kind of take care of those. Well, if you're not eating a lot of foods that causes this oxidation, why do you need that many antioxidants? And I talk about how if you eat too many antioxidants, it can actually become pro-oxidants, which is basically they start to create oxidation even in the body. So, but if people are still afraid of antioxidants, you could have salmon. That red hue color is an antioxidant. I think taurine is another one. So animals do have antioxidants. They just don't have as much as like, say, blueberries. The other thing is we think about eating the rainbow. And I argue that when it comes to the plant-based foods, if you think about broccoli, kale, kohlrabi, cauliflower, mustard, they're all from the same plant. So humans made all these plants, yet we say eat the rainbow. So if a dietitian saw all those plants on your plate, they would think you're great, you're eating a rainbow, but you're eating the same exact food. Now, sure, they're modified and all these things, but it's a very human created thought to say eat the rainbow of plants. I mean, just 200 years ago, people did not have access to all these plants that we would be eating. And then finally, we're not thinking about the anti-nutrients. So that's again, the plant toxins where I know for kale, for example, we think it's a superfood, or even spinach, which has a lot of iron. But when I went in for my first OBGYN check when I was pregnant, I was eating a pound of spinach a day, and they told me, which is 16 ounces, and they told me that I was anemic. So I should have learned then that I'm not absorbing the iron. So it has to get converted into the version we can use. And there's many of them.
Bioavailable, right? The iron.
Right. Right. So just like carrots with beta carotene, in order to use it as vitamin A, which vitamin A is the thing that helps your vision, but you have to be able to assimilate the beta carotene into retinol, and not everyone is able to do that. Same thing with K1 and K2. So there's a bunch of these examples. And so when you think on the nutrition facts, it says, this is how much iron spinach has. But the question is, how much of it are you really absorbing?
Exactly. And do you actually absorb? Yeah.
Right. And there was a recent thing that the environmental working group came out with, showing that kale has all these heavy metals, because kale, you know, if you think about all the leaves, lots of water gets stuck in it. So as they're going through the chemical processing, even if it's organic, they still use some type of chemical to feed and fertilize the soil and also ward off of bugs, even, but they're organic. And so they have found that a lot of kale accumulates lots of heavy metals because of the leaves and the way that they're designed. Mm. And so it's just, it's how do you know that the plant is really that good? And even if we talk about proteins and amino acids, we need amino acids and the specific 9 that are deficient in our bodies. Well, when we eat plants, we say this has like soy or green peas has so much protein. But if you look at these specific amino acids, they're missing 1 or 2. And so they're not complete. And these are the things that are not listed on nutrition facts or told as a plant-based nutritionist. These truths that, and then you wonder why vegans, when they're 60, 70, they look so frail, and it's because they're malnourished.
So avoiding anti-nutrients and avoiding the plant-based food out there, do you think it ever gets boring to be a carnivore, avoiding all that you're avoiding?
I think it depends on, for me personally,
because I mean, spices, for example, herbs and all of those that adds flavor, right? You avoid them all, black pepper, chili.
Not as much now, but if I'm the one cooking, I still just use salt. So it depends. I mean, I will go with how I feel, but I also know that sometimes if I use herbs, like if I use garlic for an example, I get a little bit more bloated than if I don't use garlic, and I can tell immediately. But garlic is very, very flavorful. So you just have to find that balance of what is worth it for you. I think get to a baseline of health, figure out what makes you feel the best. And then from there, you have to decide, if I add garlic back, do I feel still good? And even if I have a little bit of bloat, if I feel generally okay still, then maybe garlic's okay. And that's where everyone, when they do the reintroduction, if you go through the whole carnivore cure protocol and you do reintroductions, you have to figure out which plants you want to keep in, which plants you want to add back. And especially if you go on a holiday, what is worth you eating, right? So I believe that people should heal enough and get to a place where if it's their birthday and they want to have cake, that they can handle it mentally. And then second, they know they won't feel as good. They'll have a lot of sugar in their body, but then the next day they continue on and they eat as clean as they can. And I think that is ideal eating long-term, but people have to work on so many different things to get there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. What about alcohol? Do you drink alcohol?
So I was nursing my second son for 5 years and I was carnivore the whole time, or like the last 4 years. And so I didn't drink because I was nursing, I was breastfeeding him. And so now I don't, it's been, I was either pregnant or nursing my 2 children for the last 8 years. So I just,
the
didn't.
Last 8 years.
Okay. I could, if I wanted now, but, I've done a lot of research on alcohol too. So it's like the, which ones do you want to choose, right? So sometimes I'll drink a water out of a water bottle, which is not ideal too. So it's like, I'll drink the water bottle sometimes, but then I won't have the alcohol. So it's that trade-off of, you know, just finding balance. Yeah. If people enjoy alcohol, just make sure you hydrate after, make sure you eat it with food so it's not hitting your liver so quickly, and make sure you're not drunk before going to bed so that you can get restorative sleep, and then try not to drink it every single day.
Yeah, that's super important. The sleep actually is what makes a lot of people actually avoid alcohol at the end. Several friends that they stop drinking, even like a beer or a glass of wine before for dinner, because makes you sleep.
It affects their sleep.
It affects their sleep, yeah.
Yeah.
So what about
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was curious about the carnivore diet when it comes to treating autoimmune diseases like Hashimoto's, for example.
Yeah. So
what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's the majority of people we work with. They always have like 1 or 2 or 3 autoimmune illnesses. Maybe they don't have an autoimmune, but they're struggling with something, environmental illness like Lyme or mold. But autoimmune is pretty much, it starts in the gut. So if your gut lining is breached, let's say you're eating foods like nuts that are kind of ripping the endothelial cell or the lining of your gut. And so there's this fine line that protects that allows nutrients to go into your bloodstream so that you can feed your body. But that also signals to your immune system that's right by the lining that, hey, there might be an invader coming in. And so these immune systems, like 70 to 80% of your immune system is in your gut for this reason. So what happens is your immune system will attack these foods to make sure they don't come into the lining. But over time, if your lining gets breached, food particles, and maybe it's not digested well because you don't have enough stomach acid, it starts leaching into your barrier, gets into the bloodstream, and your immune system starts tagging it as this protein from maybe it's a peanut you ate. This protein is an enemy, and anytime you see it, attack it. Well, the thing is, there might be a protein in your thyroid that looks very similar. And so on accident, your body will now start attacking your thyroid or now start attacking other things. So if you are struggling with an autoimmune, it's some part of your body, your immune system is attacking some part of your body. If you seal the gut lining, there is no way that food will go in and cause havoc. And so as you heal your gut, your immune system will stop being on as much alert and be in more of a surveillance mode of just everything's good. I'm just being like a security guard rather than I'm in fight mode.
And so, you can seal it with the carnivore diet. That's what you're saying.
Yes. Yeah. And as you heal the gut, and sometimes you might need probiotics, sometimes you might need digestive enzymes, but I have seen people's antibody markers of thyroid, so like the TPAOB, those markers go down because of the diet is improving their overall health.
Yeah. And what will you say are the most common enemies? Is it gluten? Is it lectins in forms of legumes? Or
I would say the biggest culprits are oxalates, lectins, and phytates. So those are all in mostly nuts, seeds, sometimes squashes. Squashes has a lot of lectins, so it really depends. I think for gut function, lectins are the worst. So you just got to see, you would have to just look up a list of what are lectins or what foods have
legumes
lectins
in it. Basically, right?
Legumes are there. There's certain plants. It's more than just legumes though. And then oxalates are in like dark chocolate, almonds, turmeric is really high, leafy greens. And then phytates are in a lot of things, but mostly grains and seeds and nuts. I had any choices in a perfect world, I would say try not to eat nuts. If you're going to eat nuts, the safest one is probably macadamia because it's mostly fat and not protein. It's the proteins in the nuts that cause a lot of the issues and maybe some of the carbohydrates. But macadamia has very little protein, so it's mostly fat. And then if you were to reduce most of the grains, and if you just reduce a lot of the packaged processed foods for most people, and like the added sugar, the carbohydrates of grains, and seed oils, like these would be advantageous for people trying to heal.
Yeah. And that way you can heal your gut, right? You can seal.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Yeah. Because think about it like this, every time you're eating, it's either a friend or a foe. And every time it's a foe, it's causing inflammation in your body. So if you eat less foey foods, you have less inflammation. And so less of your immune system has to attack your body.
Yeah.
And that's the simplest way to think about it. And it's so simple.
Really simple. Yeah, it's simple. So I've seen that you involve your family, your sons. You have two sons, right?
Yes, I have two boys.
Two boys. So what are your thoughts on the paleo diet or carnivore diet when it comes to children? How easy is that to implement a carnivore diet because the kids are going to friends or they're at school, or how do you manage that?
Yeah, so my kids are not carnivore. There was a period I tried to make them carnivore, and it just was very difficult on our family because we would go to birthday parties, and then they felt very, you know, at a young age, you just want to feel connected. And so when they couldn't eat certain things, so we have a balance now. Our kids are low carb on some days they're keto, some days they're mostly carnivore, but generally speaking, they eat a lot of meat. I make their lunches almost all carnivore because they're just used to it now. They've grown up always eating meat. There was a period I was sending my kids with liver pate and the kids in the class would say, ew, it smells, but they got used to it. And it's educating them. So it's telling them, I think with children about anything, instead of just saying, no, you can't do that or stop doing this, if you explain, because they're just little humans, and explaining to them why. So I explained to my children, they know why meat is ideal and carbs are not as ideal, but they still eat carbs because I don't want them to struggle with an eating disorder. I don't want them to leave our home and then, you know, go party with beer and pizza in college or university. So I give them that education, and it isn't easy, especially if your kids are already older and you try to switch it. But my kids, I mean, my youngest, he's now six. Ever since he was eating, he's eaten meat-based. So that's really all he knows. My oldest was a carb eater because I was plant-based, and I think truly he loves carbs. So there's this fine balance, and I say, okay, eat the meat first, eat the fat first, and then you could have like one carb. What would you like? And on birthdays, I would still let them eat the pizza and cake. But if they feel like a tummy ache, we have the conversation. It's probably because of all the junk you were eating, right? So it's a fine balance. I never want my children to have an eating disorder like I struggled with. So, our children need the fat and the proteins because that is what helps grow a healthy brain.
Yeah, totally. I have four boys myself. Okay. And the oldest, he's 16 now. Okay. And he loves meat. He's such a carnivore. but Lucas, he's 14 now. He loves carbs. I mean, he's a carb lover. And but still, I mean, I give them like cheesy snacks to bring to school, and their friends, you know, they just love their snacks that my boys take to school.
Right.
So they But I remember when I was a kid, you know, I was being celiac, and when in the 70s, nobody, there was like, I think it was 1 out of 1,000. So it was really something really odd. And, you know, when you're a kid, you don't want to be different. So it was, I struggled for a few years, and then I accepted it and it got better. And so I think when you grow older and you realize that you haven't had gluten when you're a kid, that's such a gift, you know, but when you're a child, you don't really see that.
Yeah, of course. And that's that balance, right? So as much as my kids know that cupcakes and pizzas at a birthday party isn't good, they want to just fit in. And so it's just that fine balance of, so I won't say, go ahead, eat whatever you want at the dessert table. I'll say, fine, pick one or two things and maybe one we'll take home. And so it's just that fine balance. The biggest recommendation I give parents is, don't have your kids snack too much, because when my kids are full, they don't want to eat the meat at dinner because they're already full. They just want to snack and then not eat anymore. Our kids do not snack. So we will have a dessert after the meal, after they're nourished with meats and fats, and then the sugar won't hit their belly and their liver that fast. But I won't just, you know, like, let's say they come home from school and they're hungry, I'll say, sure, you could have a meat stick or you could have cheese, but I won't let them eat empty carbohydrates on an empty stomach. Cause you know, people give applesauce or gummies and things like that. We do not allow, like, we don't have kid snacks at our home.
I agree. I would say that's the same for adults, right? I mean, friends of mine, they keep asking me, Niklas, what do I do to lose weight? I want to lose like 15 kilos. And they keep snacking all day. And I tell them that, come on, let's try to do at least, try to eat lunch and dinner. Skip breakfast, lunch, dinner, and no snacking in between. But that's really hard for them because they've been snacking for 30, 40 years, no?
Yeah, so the snacking,
their daily routine.
Right, and the thing is, a lot of times the snacks have less nutrition. But then by dinner or lunch, you're not as hungry because you've been snacking. But the worst thing is that every time you snack, you're giving a glucose response and then insulin. Exactly. So you're going the glucose insulin response, then it'll make you hungrier more often. You'll be more, the more you tap into glucose and using insulin, and over time, if you have blood sugar dysregulation, it impacts your mood. It causes you to be more tired. You're always either needing a snack as a pick-me-up or you need a coffee as a pick-me-up. And so it's just, once you fuel the body the right way, and then once you're finally hungry for lunch, you can eat a full steak and it's good for you and it tastes good. But if you're snacking all day, a steak doesn't sound as good.
No, totally.
Yeah.
Okay, so one last question.
Sure, sure.
I was usually when you talk about the carnivore diet, people do like the idea because, I mean, meat, seafood, that's something that most people like. The right. only thing is that it could be expensive. So what would you recommend for like people, they're on a budget, they want to be able to eat all these, you know, steaks, fish, seafood without spending right. a fortune? What would you recommend?
Yeah, so I, in the States, typically all the grocery stores sends out a periodical for sales on certain meats on a Wednesday. So then if you look at that, you can save and then maybe get a freezer chest. So you can save meats that are on sale that you like. Other than that, I would recommend, like you can eat pretty cheap sardine foods or canned foods of fish, and they're decent quality for not that much. So you can eat like canned sardines or maybe canned salmon and just make sure they don't add anything else other than water and maybe salt. Those are not too bad. But a lot of the ground meats, those are also economical as well. I think in the UK, they call it mincemeat. I don't know what they call it there, but
yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So that's also economical. But the biggest thing is either the way that I do it is either I will work with the farmer and I'll order like half a cow. And then I'll get the half a cow and then we'll put that in the freezer. I also shop the sale. So every Wednesday, if there's a certain cut of meat that we like, either pork spare ribs or like a ribeye or some type of fatty meat, we'll buy a bunch of those and we'll store it in our freezer. And so then the next week, if nothing is on sale, we won't eat those meats. And we try to be economical with that because it is expensive. It can be expensive, but you have to think about if you don't use as many seasonings or if you're not snacking as much or if you're not drinking all these other drinks, you actually save money over time. And then you're not taking possibly medications, right? You're not taking allergy medications or heartburn medications because you're not experiencing these things. So in a overall health perspective, you're probably saving money, even though like a pound of meat can be expensive.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, because basically carbs drives hunger. You get more hungry, right?
Yeah.
But when you eat, like, as you said before, bone broth, for example, with a lot of collagen, healthy fats, right? That's very satiating. So,
right.
So I totally agree. Doesn't have to be more expensive. It could be actually more. It could be cheaper.
Right. Right. Yeah. No. Exactly. I think it is cheaper if you consider all things. So if you think about, I know a family will say, but I can feed my kids a sandwich with like one piece of deli meat and a cheese, and it's like 50 cents for every child or something. But if you think about in the future, like if they have to go to the doctor because they have eczema or they have to, you have to buy eczema cream or if you, they have allergies and hives and, or if they miss a day of school, like what is the cost of you not working?
Yeah.
And we don't think about all of these things. I mean, you cannot put a measure on health, but you can find deals. I think maybe in Europe, it's working with farmers and seeing better deals. I mean, you'll also get higher quality meats too, but just figuring out what makes sense for your family. For us, it's doing this sales on grocery stores, but the freezer is a big save for us so that we can have all this extra meat and not worry about running out.
Yeah. And the nose to tail concept. I mean, I love it. Actually the most expensive parts, like the, what is it called? Filet mignon or the tenderloin or what is it called?
Well, in the US? Far in the US, it's the ribeye. That's probably one of the most expensive.
I mean, I just love the sweet bread, for example. I love to do bone broth and the parts of the animal that are not expensive at all.
Yes.
So it doesn't have to be expensive, right?
Yeah. I mean, just the other day for my family, I use a tougher meat. So it's not, you can't really eat it as steak. I just put it in bone broth for a
like
day
a
and a
cooker,
half.
Right?
Yeah. I put it in slow cooker and we ate it that way. And then today in their lunch, I just made it a stir fry, the rest of the meat. Cause it's like, now it's soft and you could just pull it apart.
Exactly.
It's just,
that's amazing.
There's always
I
options.
Love that kind of, totally. So thank you so much, Judy. Where can people find you?
Yes. Thank you for having me again. This was fun. So I am at Nutrition with Judy on all pretty much social media platforms. I have the podcast Nutrition with Judy, also as Cutting Against the Grain. And my book is called Carnivore Cure. I think in Europe, you might be only able to buy the ebook and audio, but you can get the book Carnivore Cure. It's there. Yeah. And if you want to work with us, you can work with us at nutritionwithjudy.com.
Great, great. So yeah, thank you so much. It's been, I learned so much this okay, hour good. talking to you. Have a great afternoon. Talk to you soon.
It was nice meeting you.
Thank you for tuning in to the Hunger for Change podcast. I learned so much from Judy, and I hope this conversation is valuable to you as well. I also wanted to take a moment to talk about Naturally, my brand of healthy food products. At Naturally, we are on a mission to change the world through what we eat. This is why we worked so hard to make products that are delicious and also good for you. They're all gluten-free and have no refined sugar. My personal favorites are the cheesy snacks, chocolates, and cacao hazelnut spread. We also have kale chips, granolas, nut bars, nut butters, and protein powders, as well as many cool snacks to be released this year. At the moment, Naturally is only available in Europe. You can head over to our website, naturally.com, and it will take you to our online store. If you're in Italy, Portugal, Germany, Poland, France, the Netherlands, or Sweden, you can find them in Amazon. Search for Naturally. I will leave all of these links in the description anyway, so that you can find them. Thank you so much for listening, and stay tuned for the next episode.